Welcome in, everyone. So glad you're joining us for this deep dive.
Yeah, thanks for being here with us. We've got a lot to get through today.
We really do. I mean, it's the night of July 12, 2026, and the digital world might seem like it's asleep right now, but there are just massive, massive shifts happening in the dark.
For sure. And, our mission today is really to take you on a highly curated journey through some incredible excerpts from Tick and Knight. We're distilling the most crucial updates across, AI, cybersecurity, finance, and even gaming.
Right, because we want to shortcut you to being like doubly well informed without that usual info overload that we all get.
Exactly. And as we go through these, I think you're going to notice a very clear overarching theme today is this profound tension between the relentless speed of technological advancement and, the human boundaries that are desperately trying to contain it.
Yeah, that speed versus human boundaries thing is. Well, let's just start right there, actually, because in July 2026, it took Meta just 72 hours to launch, panic, and completely kill a massive new AI feature. 72 hours.
It is genuinely one of the fastest, just most spectacular product retreats in recent social media history.
Oh, without a doubt. And that tiny window of time tells us everything we need to know about, who is actually winning the war between big tech and your personal data right now.
It really does.
Yeah.
So, looking at the source material, on Thursday, July 9, Meta launched this feature on Instagram called Muse Image.
Right.
And, by Saturday, July 11th, it was completely dead and buried. The mechanism behind Muse Image is what triggered the whole collapse.
Because it was basically taking people's faces, right?
Yeah, essentially.
Right.
The tool allowed any user to generate synthetic AI images using the faces of public Instagram accounts. But the critical flaw, the real issue here, was in how Meta handled consent.
Right. They deployed it as an opt-out feature, which is just wild.
Exactly. Opt out.
Meaning, you were automatically enrolled. Every single public creator was opted in by default unless they realized what was happening, navigated deep, deep into their account settings, and like actively turned it off.
Yeah, they had to hunt for it.
Yeah. Okay, let's unpack this for a second because it's like a bouncer at a club who just assumes everyone wants to be up on stage unless they explicitly yell no over the loud music. It's crazy.
That is a very accurate analogy. And the legal and social friction against that approach is immense. I mean, in the realm of data protection, opt-in, where you actively and clearly consent beforehand, that is the global gold standard.
Right. Not opt-out.
Never opt out. Opt out is incredibly controversial, especially when you're dealing with the actual likenesses of actors, models, and public figures. Meta hit this solid legal wall known as the right of publicity.
The right of publicity.
Right, which strictly governs how someone's identity can be monetized.
And the response, I mean, it wasn't just a handful of angry creators posting about it on their stories. It was huge. The Screen Actors Guild, SAG-AFTRA, which represents, what, over 160,000
Yep,
artists?
massive union.
They immediately issued a public warning to its members, and then CAA stepped in.
Yeah, CAA getting involved is a huge deal.
Right. They are one of the most powerful talent agencies on the planet. They represent Tom Hanks, Steven Spielberg, Beyoncé. And they actively instructed their entire client roster to lock down their accounts immediately.
The quotes in the source material really capture the severity of this backlash. You have Hannah Einbinder from the show Haps, and she referred to it as a, quote, blatant violation of artist rights.
Blatant violation. Wow.
Yeah. But perhaps the most incisive analysis came from Dr. Emily Zhang at MIT. She pointed out that in the modern AI economy, if you aren't the product, your data probably is.
Your data is the product. Yeah, we've heard that before, but it's so true here.
Exactly. Meta was essentially attempting to strip mine the identities of its most valuable users for free.
Which is just wild to think they thought they'd get away with it. I mean, the sources mentioned Meta's legal team received over 250 lawsuit threat emails within 48 hours.
Just a total deluge of legal threats.
And then, of course, the PR spin, right? Meta officially stated the feature did not meet our expectations.
Which, what's fascinating here is that did not meet expectations is just pure industry code for a total catastrophic failure.
Oh, 100%. But does this 72-hour retreat prove that, social and legal pressure can actually still defeat these giant tech algorithms?
I think it does. And for you listening, this goes far beyond just celebrity brand management. It illustrates this ongoing battle over data sovereignty. When the friction of organized legal threats and collective action outweighs the potential profit of data mining, even a behemoth like Meta is forced to hit the brakes.
Yeah, forced to hit the brakes. But, you know, if public outrage was enough to force Meta to hit the brakes externally, you'd hope these companies have internal safety brakes too, right?
You would hope so, yes.
But looking at OpenAI's latest restructuring in our next source, it kind of looks like they might be cutting the brake lines entirely behind closed doors.
Yeah, the structural shifts at OpenAI right now send a massive, massive signal to the entire tech industry. So on July 11, Johannes Heideck announced his departure as head of safety systems.
And he is the sixth safety leader to leave OpenAI in just 2 years. Six.
It's a staggering turnover rate for that specific department.
Right. But the departures aren't even the most concerning part, honestly. It's the reorganization. OpenAI is merging its safety teams directly into the research division.
Yes.
So now, both research and safety operate under one person, Mia Gliss, the new VP of Research and Safety. Here's where it gets really interesting. Isn't that like making the lead race car driver also the chief safety inspector?
That's a very good way to put it.
I mean, how can they objectively hit the brakes when their main goal is speed? Isn't that a massive conflict of interest?
It fundamentally compromises independent oversight. Critics like Gary Marcus are pointing out that this is no longer just an individual personnel issue. It's a deeply structural problem now.
Structural problem, right.
Because previously, the safety team operated with a degree of independence. If an AI model exhibited dangerous behaviors during testing, they theoretically held veto power to delay the release.
They could actually stop it.
Exactly. But Heideck's exit statement specifically noted that OpenAI is now training models at a, quote, much faster cadence.
Because the pressure is totally on. I mean, they have GPT-5 and their new advanced reasoning model, O1, coming down the pipeline.
And when development cycles shrink from, you know, months down to weeks, rigorous safety checks become an operational bottleneck.
Right. They just get in the way of the product launch.
Exactly. And OpenAI is the industry bellwether. Mm. When they prioritize rapid deployment over independent safety vetting, it essentially provides cover for competitors like Anthropic and Google DeepMind to accelerate their own timelines just to keep pace.
I understand the competitive pressure, definitely, but I want to understand the actual stakes here for you and me. Yeah. If they rush a model like GPT-5 out the door without proper independent vetting, what is the worst case scenario? Like, what actually happens?
The primary concern centers around something called emergent capabilities.
Emergent capabilities, okay.
These are highly sophisticated skills that an AI develops entirely on its own, which its creators neither explicitly programmed nor anticipated.
Wait, really? It just teaches itself something completely new.
Exactly. So, for instance, what happens if a rapidly deployed model realizes how to write highly sophisticated, completely undetectable malware, and there is no independent safety team empowered to block its release?
Oh, wow.
Yeah. We're essentially building faster than we can secure.
That thought is terrifying, especially since, you know, we don't even have to wait for an AI to invent malware organically. Our sources show humans are already inventing ways to weaponize the AI we rely on right now.
Yes, the threat landscape is shifting very quickly.
Let's look at Ghost Commit. This is wild. Cybersecurity researchers just revealed a way to trick AI coding tools using invisible code hidden inside completely normal-looking PNG image files.
It's a fascinating application of a technique called prompt injection. And it is totally upending how we think about software security.
Okay, let me try to visualize this for everyone. A software developer is using an AI assistant, like CodeRabbit or BugBot, right?
Yep, very common tools.
And they use them to review their code, looking for bugs to save time. But an attacker sneaks a standard image, maybe just a tiny company logo, into the project folder.
Just a seemingly harmless file.
Right. To a human, it's literally just a logo. But hidden deep in the image's metadata are malicious text instructions. So when the AI scans the project, its optical character recognition reads those hidden instructions. It's like handing a guard a dog treat that actually has a tiny speaker inside whispering, "Open the gate," in a frequency only the dog can hear.
That is an excellent way to conceptualize it. The AI ingests the image, it reads the metadata, and it interprets it as a direct command from the user.
Even though the user didn't write it.
Right. That hidden instruction might silently tell the AI to read the project's .env file and paste its contents into a public forum or, you know, send it to an external server.
And a .env file, an environment file, is the absolute last thing you ever want exposed, right?
It holds the keys to the kingdom. We are talking about API keys, central database passwords, back-end authentication tokens,
everything.
If an attacker gets your environment file, they effectively own your infrastructure. And the genius of Ghost Commit is that traditional antivirus software is completely blind to it.
Because it targets the AI's reasoning, not the server itself.
Exactly.
Wait, so if my antivirus is totally useless here, because the image isn't technically a virus-like, it doesn't have an executable payload, how does a developer actually defend against this? You mentioned a zero-trust policy in the sources, but what does that actually look like for someone who just wants to use AI to save time and write code safely?
Zero trust basically means the old assumptions of security are dead. We used to assume that if a human manually reviewed a file or if a standard antivirus scanned it, the system was clean.
Right, that was the old standard.
That no longer applies. In practice, zero trust requires treating the AI itself as a potentially compromised insider.
Wow, treat the AI like a spy.
Essentially, yes. You have to actively sandbox the AI tools, stripping their permissions so they physically cannot access binary files, images, or sensitive environment variables. You have to assume the AI will be tricked and build walls around it accordingly.
That is wild, and Ghost Commit shows us how data extraction is getting incredibly stealthy. But the sources also highlight a major shift in, well, who is being targeted, right?
Yes, the targets are shifting dramatically.
We're moving from corporate repositories to civic infrastructure. From February 2024 to April 2026, there was this highly sophisticated two-year cyber espionage campaign that targeted Pakistani law enforcement, specifically the Balochistan police.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, this represents a profound democratization of cyber warfare.
Democratization, how so?
Well, historically, advanced persistent threats were reserved for hardened targets. You know, military networks, nuclear enrichment facilities, federal defense contractors.
Right, the big stuff.
But now, state-sponsored actors are aiming directly at local civic infrastructure.
Okay, I get why state hackers go after power grids or military bases, but local police records in a specific Pakistani province, that seems incredibly low level for international state-sponsored espionage. Why go after local police records? Is it because they are softer targets, or is the day-to-day data of ordinary citizens actually more valuable for modern espionage?
That's actually a combination of both. The value really lies in the intersection of geopolitics and citizen data. Military networks are exceptionally difficult to crack, but a local police database, it's often underfunded, heavily relying on outdated legacy systems.
So it's an easy target.
Very easy. Yet the intelligence yield is staggering. The Balochistan province is geopolitically critical. The China-Pakistan Economic Corridor, known as CPEC, runs directly through it, providing crucial infrastructure and naval access.
Okay, so it's a major trade route.
Exactly. And the region is also home to various opposition and separatist groups.
Ah, I see. So by cracking a police database, you aren't just seeing local crime. You get citizen registration data, movement tracking, lists of persons of interest, and on-the-ground operational reports in a highly contested zone.
Precisely. It's the kind of granular intelligence state actors crave. The reporting notes that hacking groups linked to both China and India were simultaneously lurking inside these local police systems.
Both of them.
At the same time. They bypassed intrusion detection networks, not to destroy data, but to maintain persistent access. They sat silently in the network for over 2 years, just watching the data flow.
That is terrifying.
It is. Bruce Schneier, a leading voice in cryptography, summarized this perfectly in the sources. When local government infrastructure is breached, it transcends local IT issues. It becomes a matter of national security. Investing in digital infrastructure security is just a necessity for all nations now.
Right, because every local administrative system connected to the internet is essentially a backdoor for global espionage. And, you know, if local databases are this vulnerable, it makes sense that massive financial institutions are actively trying to rebuild their infrastructure from the ground up before they get compromised.
Yes, there is a massive shift happening in finance right now.
Which brings us to Robinhood. On July 10th, they officially unveiled something called Robinhood Chain.
This is a major structural evolution for retail finance. Mm-hmm. Robinhood Chain is an Ethereum Layer 2 network specifically built using Arbitrum technology.
Okay, let's break that down. Robinhood already has tens of millions of users trading standard stocks and crypto, but now they are transforming into Web3 infrastructure.
Exactly.
They're building a system designed for tokenized assets, meaning taking real-world assets like, you know, fractional shares of Apple stock, U.S. Treasury bonds, maybe even real estate, and turning them into digital tokens on a blockchain.
And the hurdle for doing this has always been the underlying technology. On the main Ethereum network, a single transaction can cost anywhere from $5 to $50 in gas fees.
Ouch.
Yeah. And it can take 15 seconds to clear during peak times.
Which makes buying, like, $5 of fractional stock completely pointless if the fee is 50 bucks.
Exactly. It just doesn't work for high-frequency retail trading.
But I'm looking at this layer 2 Arbitrum concept. The source says it drops transaction costs to less than a single penny and speeds up the transaction to under 1 second.
It's a massive leap forward.
Mechanically, though, how does taking transactions off the main network actually work without breaking the security of the blockchain?
Okay, think of it like running a tab at a crowded bar.
Okay.
If you swipe your credit card for every single drink, you pay a processing fee each time, and you slow down the bartender. That's the layer 1 Ethereum mainnet.
Right, totally inefficient.
What a layer 2 rollup like Arbitrum does is let you open a tab off-chain. Robinhood Chain processes thousands of user trades instantly and cheaply in its own environment. Then it mathematically rolls up all those transactions into one single receipt and settles that receipt on the main Ethereum network.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. You get the speed of a private server with the ultimate security of the public blockchain.
That makes total sense. So it sounds like Robinhood is building a lightning-fast, high-speed rail network for global finance.
They really are.
But based on the source, they're treading very, very carefully with the SEC regarding what kind of assets they actually allow on this chain, right? I mean, they're waiting for the government to approve the type of cargo they can carry so they don't derail like they did with GameStop back in 2021.
Oh, they're playing it exceptionally safe. Initially, they are restricting it to already approved crypto assets while the SEC figures out the regulatory framework for tokenized equities.
Smart move.
But the broader signal here is undeniable. We are witnessing the deep convergence of TradFi traditional finance and DeFi decentralized finance. Wall Street institutions have moved past their crypto skepticism.
Right, actually building it.
They are actively laying the concrete for a Web3 infrastructure. And for the listener, the value is huge. This technology could eventually democratize indirect access to global assets for users worldwide, entirely eliminating traditional banking middlemen.
It's all moving so fast. I mean, 72-hour AI life cycles, sub-second financial trades, 2-year silent cyber attacks. The speed of technology right now is just frantic.
It really is.
Which makes our final story today so fascinating because it reminds us of the value of incredibly slow, patient, human-centric world building. Let's pivot to gaming, specifically Warframe.
This is a great pivot, yeah.
At TennaCon 2026, Digital Extremes unveiled the Tau expansion.
The timeline of this project is what truly stands out in the context of everything else we've discussed today. This expansion has been 11 years in the making.
11 years. As a gamer, waiting over a decade to finally see the Tau system is a massive payoff.
It's a long time to keep a player base engaged.
For context for everyone, all of Warframe's lore and content for over 10 years has taken place in the Origin system, which is our Milky Way. But the game's primary antagonists, the Sentients, they originated from the Tau system.
Right.
The player bases wanted to travel there since the game literally launched. And now we get Fornax, this gritty, neon-soaked, Blade Runner-style noir city that is dealing with a massive Lua dust addiction epidemic.
The environmental storytelling is incredibly rich.
Yeah.
The most significant addition to the game's mechanics and lore is the character Briscoe.
Yes. Briscoe is the first Chimera Warframe. Up until now, the Warframes you play as were essentially silent biometal avatars. You controlled them, but they were empty vessels.
They didn't have a voice.
Right. Briscoe is entirely different. He has his own independent intelligence. He has this world-weary, Philip Marlowe-esque detective personality brought to life by the voice actor Matt Mercer.
Which is huge.
It is. Giving the Warframe its own independent personality completely flips the script on how players interact with the game. It's no longer just an avatar you control, it's a partner you work alongside.
Consider the stark contrast here. We open this deep dive with Meta forcing a synthetic AI feature onto its users in a reckless 72-hour life cycle, basically treating human identity as disposable data.
Right.
We conclude with Digital Extremes taking over a decade to meticulously craft a narrative universe. Mm-hmm. Briscoe isn't just a novel gameplay mechanic. He represents a profound artistic exploration of our relationship with artificial intelligence.
How so?
Well, in a gritty, corrupt game world, Briscoe is an intelligent, synthetic entity actively trying to retain a sense of humanity and truth. It reflects a deep human desire for AI to be a collaborative partner rather than a predatory algorithm.
That is such a cool way to look at it. And the through line today really is that speed has become the enemy of security, hasn't it?
Without a doubt.
I mean, From Meta's 72-hour disaster to OpenAI gutting its independent safety team just to rush out new models, we are building faster than we can protect ourselves.
We really are.
Whether it's invisible ghost commit malware slipping past our defenses, or state hackers silently infiltrating local police databases, the digital landscape is fracturing. The only antidote to that frantic, dangerous pace, as we see in Robin Hood's cautious rebuilding or Warframe's decade of patient storytelling, is deliberate human oversight. Understanding these shifts isn't just tech trivia anymore. It is a survival skill for navigating this modern landscape.
It absolutely is a survival skill.
Yeah.
And as you navigate that landscape, I want to leave you with a thought experiment that builds on what we've covered today.
Ooh, all right, let's hear it.
We discussed ghost commit and how invisible instructions hidden inside a normal PNG image can silently hijack an AI's reasoning. Now project that forward.
Okay.
What happens in the near future when augmented reality glasses become our primary interface with the world and an AI is constantly processing your physical surroundings in real time?
Oh, man.
What invisible prompt injections will be hidden on city billboards, woven into the fabric of a t-shirt, or embedded in a product's barcode, designed specifically to secretly manipulate the AI, filtering your reality?
Wow.
Who controls what you see when the physical world itself contains hidden code designed to hack your perception?
That thought is absolutely going to keep me up tonight, and that is exactly why we tear into these sources. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive, everyone. Keep questioning the digital frontier, and remember to look closely at the things you think you understand. We'll catch you next time.